Second case of the morning, the United States versus Richard Schweitzer, appeal number 09-2103.
Good morning, and may it please the court. I appear today on behalf of Richard Schweitzer, who asked this court to review de novo the procedure utilized by the district court in imposing upon him, a first-time nonviolent drug offender, a 46-month term of imprisonment. Mr. Schweitzer's more particularized complaint is that the district court, to utilize phraseology from this court, passed over in silence his principal non-frivolous reasons for a beneath-guideline sentence. That argument was premised on the idea that the United States Sentencing Commission, in formulating Section 2D1.1, which is the guideline by which the offense level in drug trafficking cases is determined, created a methodology by which quantity is used as a proxy for culpability. In other words, if you're involved with heroin of this much, you get this base offense level. If the increment of heroin goes up, the increment of the offense level goes up, and with that, the sentencing guideline range increases. Not only...
That's been the case since November of 1987 when the guidelines took effect.
That's correct.
And quantity driven, on the theory that the more you handle, the more responsibility you have because you're peddling more of this bad stuff, and heroin is bad stuff.
And clearly heroin being bad stuff appears from the record to be the one and only concern that the district court focused upon. But going back to the history that Your Honor has cited, the fact of the matter is that we now know that Section 2D1.1, with its quantity as a proxy of culpability, was not fashioned based on empirical data of past practices. It was somewhat randomly, if rationally, selected. When we appeared earlier this year in front of Judge Clavert.
But if it's rationally selected, first of all, I don't know how much you can go beyond behind the guidelines here, and that's what you're asking.
Well, actually, it's clear from Kimbrough, Gall, and other cases that a district court has every right and ability to go behind the guidelines. I fully understand that just a few weeks ago, in a decision authored by Judge Posner, I think Aguiar Huerta, this court has said that when a defendant asks a court to go beneath or behind the guidelines, a court does not have to do that in affirmative express terms. But the essence of Mr. Schweitzer's argument to the sentencing judge was that rational as this quantity as a proxy for culpability might be in the Mine Run case, in this particular case involving this particular defendant, there are a multitude of ways in which that quantity as a proxy for culpability is flawed. The sentencing judge never directly or even indirectly nor implicitly addressed those arguments. That is procedural error.
He did not view the guidelines as mandatory here.
I think, and it's my second argument, and it's a more difficult sell, Your Honor, that a case can be made that by the methodology employed by this district court, which basically said heroin is serious, and because heroin is serious, the sentence to be imposed just happens to be the low end of the guidelines. That does seem to suggest, in the terms of this court's decision in Cunningham, that sentence was imposed in this case with a thumb on the scale of guideline sentencing. Certainly not mandatory, and certainly not expressly presumptively reasonable, but to say, well, Mr. Schweitzer, we see, as we evaluate you, the individual, I've got nothing but good things to say about you, but heroin is serious. Heroin costs lives. That's what this court, in its 2007 decision in Miranda, spoke to as truisms.
Could the judge say, I think the guidelines minimize how serious heroin is, and I think heroin is just a scourge, terrible thing, and I'm going to impose a sentence double the maximum range of the advisory guidelines. Should he say that?
That tends to get into substantive reasonableness, Your Honor. And as I indicated or tried to indicate in my briefing, I'm not here to complain that We didn't get the 12 months we asked for. Quite frankly, 12 years could, if imposed pursuant to proper procedure, be defensible as substantively reasonable. That's not my complaint here. My complaint here, consistent with the decision authored by Judge Williams in Villegas Miranda, is that when a judge passes over in silence the defendant's principal, non-frivolous argument for a beneath-guideline sentence, this court won't presume that the factors were considered, and this court cannot therefore determine for substantive purposes that the court did not abuse its sentencing discretion. In other words, without appropriate adherence to the procedural requirements, the substance can't be analyzed. And I think that is our problem here. The Supreme Court in Gall and Rita was clear that the first step in post-Booker sentencing is to adhere to a proper procedure which includes articulating the reasons in support of the selected sentence. This court, in a long line of cases starting with Cunningham in 2005 to the first Miranda in 2007 on to Villegas Miranda just in August of this year, has made clear that what needs to occur is that when the defendant advances a non-frivolous argument in support of a request for a beneath-guideline sentence, the court needs to address that. Last week's decision, authored by Judge Sykes in Poets, sort of put an outer boundary on what this court did in August in Villegas Miranda. Last Friday's decision in Poets, the court didn't address things head-on. But in the Judge Sykes opinion, it was described that this particular sentencing process in Poets was so extended, so detailed. Judge Stapmuller had rolled up his sleeves so far in terms of sleuthing out the details of that particular defendant's medical conditions and family circumstances that from the record that existed, given the rigorous procedure, there was no way, no how, that it could be said that the court didn't consider things, notwithstanding the fact that the court could have articulated things a little more clearly and a little more directly. Here, the crucial aspect of the issue appears on page 29 of the sentencing transcript, which appears at page 40 of the brief appendix to my opening brief. At that point, Judge Clavert states, "When I take all of these matters into consideration," end quote, dot, 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 "I think you deserve a guideline sentence." But if we go to every circumstance that Judge Clavert stated prior to describing taking all of these matters into consideration, none of the arguments advanced by Mr. Schweitzer, nor for that matter by the government, were even referenced. Quite frankly, Judge Clavert in this case stated his position that heroin is serious, heroin kills people, and therefore this defendant will receive a within-guideline sentence. That's procedurally flawed. It deserves a remand for a more appropriate vetting of the issue and a more informed and articulated exercise of sentencing discretion. Thank you.
Ms. Hoffman.
May it please the court, counsel, my name is Gail Hoffman. I represented the United States of America before Judge Clavert. It's the government's position that the district court did not presume the guidelines as reasonable and took into consideration the appropriate factors under Title 18 United States Code, Section 3553A. The judge is entitled to look at deterrence. The judge is entitled under 3553A to look at the nature of the offense. The judge is entitled to look at the seriousness of the offense. The judge also commented upon the defendant's correctional needs and any medical needs. And it also should, under 3553, reflect the promote respect for the law. That's what the sentence should do. And also, the district court is allowed under 3553A4 to take the guidelines into consideration. It's clear that Judge Clivert did read the defendant's sentencing memorandum about quantity in the guidelines because he referenced that in his sentencing remarks. Nowhere in the transcript does Judge Clivert ever make the statement that he assumes that the guidelines are presumptively reasonable. He analyzed the defendant's specific characteristics. He asked the probation officer to comment on the defendant. And he also had clearly read the pre-sentence report by the nature of his comments addressing some of the defendant's prior arrests and perhaps anger issues that the defendant had earlier in his life in conjunction with his depression. Given the court's specific comments on the particulars of this defendant and in conjunction with the fact that the defendant that the court need not comment on every single argument raised by the defense, it is the government's position that that the court gave the appropriate considerations to the 3553A factors, did not presume the guidelines to be reasonable, and imposed an appropriate sentence. Unless the court has further questions, the government will rest on its submissions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honors, both in its brief and in its brief argument this morning, the government's position is exactly that expressly rejected by this court in Villegas-Miranda. In other words, what the government's position in this case is, you know, the judge did explain why he was giving a within-guideline sentence, and those reasons may have been sound. In Villegas-Miranda, this court said, sound reasons aside, a court has to address the principal non-frivolous reasons that a defendant makes in support of his request for a beneath-guideline sentence. Reviewing the sentencing transcript in this case, it's inarguable that, quite frankly, the district court and defense counsel were talking past one another rather than communicating with each other. The district court simply did not address those non-frivolous arguments that Mr. Schweitzer presented in support of his request for a beneath-guideline sentence. And for those reasons, we do ask that this court vacate the sentence and remand the case to Judge Clivert for further proceedings. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.